He is the man who is arguably the greatest voice in sports commentary. at least that's what we think in World Football, here at World Football Daily anyway. He is Mr. George Mateus, commentator for Gold TV and, of course, from the Mad About Football show here at worldfootballdaily.com, joining us here on the show. George, mate, how are you, man? It's been too long since we've had you on the show.
Yeah, it's been a while since we talked, and I really appreciate you having me.
No, I'm just playing.
Oh, he's gone Elmo suddenly. I don't believe it, man.
Yeah, well, you know, I have my little nephew and niece staying with me in the house, so... You know, I've been Tickle Me Elmo has been a big part of my life the last couple of weeks, so it rubbed off there, yeah. But it's been I appreciate you guys having me once again. It's definitely, I always enjoy being on the show with you guys, so definitely.
Hey, we're anytime we can get you on, George, we're happy to have you on and chat all things football with you. And I have to say, on a personal note, it was very nice to chat a bit of football with you earlier in the week as well. We were both watching the same game, the big derby in Rio this week. Botafogo drawing away at Flamengo, an unexpected result, an absolute cracking game, and I guess proof that, you know, in a derby game, anything can happen, and the form book kind of goes out the window slightly.
Absolutely. Botafogo came into that match. They were in first place. Flamengo were in the bottom four, near the bottom four of the relegation zone in the Brasileirão. And, you know, like you said, the derby games, they always provide some kind of surprise. Botafogo in the first 45 minutes, we both called the game for different entities, obviously.
Yeah.
So we got to really analyze the game. And, you know, Botafogo looked strong in the first half. Remember, Flamengo had two goals that were nullified because of offsides. And they finally got that goal basically at the death. I mean, after the celebration, the referee blew the whistle while they were still celebrating the equalizer. So it was an amazing game, and it was good, especially when you consider the fact the Maracanã is open again. They managed to find a way to get negotiations so that the Maracanã can host a Brazilian league game. So it was an amazing, amazing finish, an amazing game between Botafogo and Flamengo.
Now, George, I've actually had a snippet from a paper here in the UK. I've been carrying it around in my wallet for, I think, for the last couple of weeks now, because I wanted to talk about somebody about this. The Maracanã, they're starting to actively discourage fans taking off their shirt, being kind of loud and noisy, the cracking atmosphere that you associate with Brazilian football, you know, the drums and stuff. The Maracanã, the people that own it as an organization, are trying to actively discourage this sort of behavior. Do you know any reason why they'd want to do this? Because obviously we know about the problems with South American football hooliganism, but at the same time, it's this kind of, you know, over the top attitude and done in a safe way. You know, taking off a t-shirt and things like that doesn't seem to affect too many people unless you're stuck next to the guy with the sweaty armpits, you know.
Yeah.
aside from that, this doesn't really affect people in that negative a way, and it really will kind of take away from that great atmosphere that the Maracanã historically is renowned for having.
Absolutely. There have been many protests over the last 2 or 3 weeks outside of the protests of the Confederations Cup, but more specifically toward the Maracanã, about the what they're calling the elitization of the Maracanã. Now it's privatized. Now it's run by a syndicate. That's what the protesters are calling it. It used to be a public stadium. It was owned by the city of Rio de Janeiro, or actually the state of Rio de Janeiro. Now it's owned by a private syndicate group, if you will. And so it's becoming kind of corporate. If you looked at, I remember, and we both called the game, the lower bowl was near empty and the upper bowl was near full. And that was because that's part of the protest that they're having in Rio about the overpricing of tickets. And they feel like they are shutting out the vast majority of the people. So they are protesting that privatization, and it's becoming more corporate. And we all know when things become more corporate, it's more buttoned down, more kind of a conservative behavior, contained behavior. And like you said, it takes away from the ambiance of South American football. We're talking specifically here about the Maracanã. So there's been a lot of tension and controversy surrounding that in Brazil about the Maracanã. And it's the people are protesting it. They're protesting the prices. They don't like the privatization of the stadium. They're saying it's no longer the people's stadium. They're saying it belongs to corporate now. So it's one of those issues where you wonder if they're doing it to appease FIFA with the upcoming World Cup and try to toe that line between still being a wild and people's stadium and the corporate image that FIFA's trying to bring for the World Cup. It's going to be something that's going to be interesting to see how it plays out over the next couple of weeks.
What about the clubs? What are the Brazilian clubs saying about this sort of thing taking place in Brazilian football? Because surely, I mean, a side like Flamengo could easily be buoyed by that sort of boisterous support in the stands when you're in the dying minutes and you really need it. You saw at the end of that game against Botafogo, obviously the late strike from Elias, as you said, getting the equaliser for Flamengo, but you saw that the crowd at points were carrying that side on, giving them that drive and that energy to push through. And if you corporatise it, then that crowd noise, that surge, that revival, that a large burst of noise from a crowd that can inject into a player's legs to keep him going in those final minutes, that will be gone.
Absolutely, absolutely. You have to remember, Flamengo, by all accounts, is the most supported team in Brazil. They are considered the most popular, highly supported team in terms of the numbers. So just off that alone, they could fill the Maracanã. And the fact that they weren't able to do that, and you, like we said, we saw that lower bowl that was near empty, it's a sign that Flamengo's probably going to lose some money. They're going to lose some money with this corporate, you know, this corporate viewpoint, and now that the Maracanã is privately owned. And it does take away from the ambiance of the game. The Brazilian clubs, I think they have mixed feelings about it. They want the fans to come out, but then they realize the bottom line of all the reais they are going to be making from the corporate partnerships as well. And so there's kind of a balance, a fine line that they're trying to walk. They want the atmosphere, they want their team to win, and they want the fan support. But at the same time, they want that corporate money to come in as well. They want the sponsors. So the Brazilian clubs have mixed feelings about it, and it's just going to be an issue that lingers until the World Cup is over. I think after the World Cup is over, it might die down a little bit and might go back toward the people, quote unquote, the people. But until then, you know, those Brazilian clubs, they have mixed feelings. They want the money, they want the revenue, and they still want that rabid support as well. And they're kind of torn in that sense.
It is that age-old question of, is football run for the fans or for the corporate sponsors? And the Maracanã seems to be going one way, that's for sure. And I don't think it's going with the fans. We saw in that game in Botafogo against Flamengo, and what sponsorship and that corporate money can bring, though. Of course, it's helped to bring people like Diego Forlan and Clarence Seedorf into the Brazilian league. Seedorf in particular looked absolutely fantastic, I thought, for Botafogo, especially in the first 45 minutes. It was just controlling that game, running things so well. The impact of players like him, the experienced player that obviously is there to pick up a decent paycheck in his final years of his career, but also can give so much more to Brazilian football and help guide maybe some of these youngsters. We were talking about Vitinho over Twitter, yourself and me, George, and help guide them and steer them on a right path, because Seedorf has always been a fairly level-headed player,
right,
who's always succeeded wherever he's gone as well. And that can only act as a good inspiration for these young Brazilians.
Oh, absolutely. I think people have to realize that in South America, they follow the big European clubs. I know it's not quite the same. It's not in reverse. It's not, you know, in Europe, a lot of the people in Europe don't really know too much about the big leagues in South America. But in South America, they follow, and the Americas in general, they follow all the big, you know, EPL and Serie A and Champions League and La Liga. So they know who these players are. They grew up with those players. They buy the jerseys. And so they're very familiar with Seedorf. When he signed with Botafogo and he was arriving in the Rio airport, there were like 2,000 people there cheering him on and happy and waving flags and showing their love and support for Seedorf. And that's before he even played a game with Botafogo. So they know his impact. And the biggest measure of his impact is the fact that they won the Carioca State Tournament this year, and they won both tournaments. There's the Taça Rio and the Taça Guanabara, which is, you know, two tournaments. They won both of them to win the Rio State Tournament. And then now they're in the top three of the Brasileirão. So his impact on the field is, you can measure it because of the trophies. Those two, the Rio State Trophy, which is huge. Believe me, in Brazil, winning a state title is massive. So that's huge, especially Botafogo, who hadn't won it in a while. So his experience, the way he's playing on the field, you saw him playing on the field. The man looks like he's still 25 years old. It's amazing. He's the shape he's in. It's incredible. I mean, he's almost old enough to be my dad. That's how it seems like, you know. But the players, they know the big European names. They watch them train and they listen. When we were doing the game and Seedorf was talking to players, you could just see with their body language that they are listening to him. Now they'll talk back to express their opinion, but there's a level of respect there. And Forlan carries that weight. You mentioned Forlan, Seedorf, the same thing. So it's huge. It's huge. And the fact that they're able to still perform at a high level even makes it more entertaining and more thrilling for those of us that like soccer, that love the beautiful game.
Elsewhere in Brazil as well, George, obviously last week, a fantastic win for Atlético Mineiro over Olimpia on penalties in the Copa Libertadores second legs final. A wonderful achievement for Atlético Mineiro. Has the party stopped yet for them? Because winning your first Copa Libertadores, I mean, that's going to be something that they're going to be celebrating for a long time now.
Oh yeah, no doubt about it. No, the party is keeps going. The party kept going. Oh yeah, here's one indication. They won the Libertadores midweek. They on Sunday they had to play against their arch rival Cruzeiro in that big Belo Horizonte derby. Cruzeiro's their bitter arch rival, city derby, and they lost 4-1. They played second string players, Atlético Mineiro, and they lost to Cruzeiro 4-1. Now, only the Libertadores, only a championship of that magnitude can distract the club enough that against their arch-hated rivals, city derby rivals, they could lose 4-1 and it's not a big deal. Like, it's not a thing where the coach is under pressure or the players get, you know, they get reprimanded by the club officials because they lost to their bitter arch rival. The fact that they had won the Libertadores midweek and it was a second string players in that derby game just goes to show that even a big rivalry game against Cruzeiro, they were still celebrating. And it wasn't even, we lost to Cruzeiro 4-1, no big deal. We got the Libertadores. So they're still partying over there, yeah.
Go on, Joe.
And just to add a point too there, Atlético Mineiro, obviously, first Libertadores championship. Cruzeiro has, I believe, two Libertadores. So for a long time, the Cruzeiro fans were holding it over the heads of the Atlético Mineiro fans. Oh, we have a Libertadores. You don't. Not anymore. So the party's still going on. I'm sure Belo Horizonte is painted in black and white in the jersey of Atlético Mineiro.
The party might stop, though, because obviously a key figure in this Atlético Mineiro side, Bernard, is hotly touted to be moving to Europe this summer. Just where is in your side of the world, George, are they talking about Bernard joining? Is it going to be a Premier League side? Apparently there's been interest from all around Europe. And is this move even going to take place? Will Mineiro be able to keep hold of him, especially with a Copa Libertadores win?
Well, he wanted to stay for the Libertadores, and now he got that. So it would not surprise me in the next, the transfer window ends end of August, right? So they still have about a month to go. He's going to be gone by then. Now, I've heard Dortmund, I've heard Tottenham, I've heard a couple of premiership teams. The most recent two that I've heard is Shakhtar Donetsk and Porto. So we shall see. Right now, Atlético Mineiro, they can name their price. Really, they can name their price with Bernard. So we'll see where he goes. Me personally, I'd like to see him go to Dortmund. I'd like to see that. I think he would fit in very well. And me being on Gold TV with the Bundesliga, I'm kind of leaning toward that way. But I think if he goes, wherever he goes, he's going to be very good. But I've heard, like you said, premiership teams, Tottenham. I've heard Shakhtar Donetsk, Porto. In the beginning, it was Dortmund. So we'll see where it ends up.
Yeah, it's no surprise that you want him to go to Dortmund, George, seeing as you are a self-confessed Dortmund fan. So it doesn't surprise us in any way, shape, or form if you want him to end up there. Is he a possible
for the underdog? You know, they're the underdog, the Bayern, and all the attention they've gotten. So
but not the underdogs in that German Super Cup. I mean, what a result! What a result for Borussia Dortmund.
Oh, absolutely! And something that we discussed on the Mad About Football podcast, when Guardiola first was named coach, is how much is Bayern going to change? And when you consider that they just won the treble, they play attractive football, they're scoring goals, And the way they were able to neutralize Barcelona in that Champions League semifinal, we're like, I hope Guardiola doesn't change too many things. Now, granted, they didn't have Ribery, they didn't have Neuer in that German Super Cup game. And Van Buyten was just a disaster in the back for that game. So it wasn't the full strength side, but at the same time, Dortmund is the only team that can hang with Bayern. I was tweeting it during the game. They're the only team that can hang with Bayern until I think Chelsea takes them on in the Super Cup. Then I want to see how Chelsea performs because I like the moves that Chelsea made. But that was just an amazing game in Dortmund. This Aubameyang kid that they got from Saint-Étienne, he's the real deal. And if he's going to fit in perfectly with his speed and the way Dortmund play. So Bayern are not going to win the championship by 25 points this season. They might win the Bundesliga, but not by 25 points. And if that German Super Cup game is any indication, it's going to go right down to the final round of the season. It's going to be great.
Is it not, though, the worst thing that could have happened for all of Bayern's opposition in the Bundesliga? Is it not a kind of a kick up the behind for Bayern for them to suddenly go, oh, we actually can lose games, you know, against good sides. Will this not just rejuvenate them, make them more fired up for the start of the Bundesliga season to try and be perfect next year?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Remember, during the preseason, Bayern were smoking teams. Now, they're playing, you know, second, third division German sides, and I believe they had Brescia, who's a, you know, lower division Serie A side, but they were whipping them 6-0, 7-0. I think one team they played, they beat them like 13-0. So they were just dusting people in the preseason. They played Barcelona in a preseason game, and they handled them 2-0. So they were impressive in the preseason. Now the real test comes with Dortmund. It was a good kick in the behind for them to wake up and say, hey, you know, this is a new season. We might have the trouble last season, but we don't have anything this season, so we really have to focus. And they have to prepare harder than everyone else because Guardiola has a new system. He's bringing in a different mentality. So it's going to take them longer. They have to work harder in order to incorporate that and then, you know, maximize the potential of it. So, yeah, it was a good wake-up call for Bayern. They needed that wake-up call, and it's going to be very interesting to see how the Bundesliga plays out this season.
George, just finally, before we let you go, and we've got the Major League Soccer All-Star Game coming up tomorrow in Kansas City. For you as a US soccer fan, how much of a nice break is it, or how much of an annoyance is this sort of thing, an All-Star Game in the middle of the season? We see it, of course, in all the other big US sports. Is it right for it to be in football as well?
Ooh, that's a great question. Great question. I like it. I like the MLS All-Star Game. I like it especially when they do it against a European club that's coming in on a U.S. tour. I like it. It is, like you mentioned, a tradition. I mean, baseball, basketball does it. So it is a tradition. The only thing that I would like to see is that I wish they would make it like an All-Star Weekend. Make it more of a situation where, like the NBA All-Star Game or MLB All-Star Game. We were talking before we got on the show, we were talking about like having maybe a skills competition. You mentioned how they should do something like that. Instead of just having the game, make it like a weekend, like an event. Have it on a weekend where the game is the centerpiece, but like on Saturday you have, I don't know, a youth academy all-star thing, or like you said,
oh, I like that
competition,
you know? I like that, like the rookie sophomore type thing, but have like exactly. A youth academy. That is a good one, mate. That is a very good one. I like that.
Yeah, something like that where you could see kind of these young players, the younger all-stars, the best players from the youth academies of the different MLS teams come together and they play in a kind of a youth academy all-star game, something like that. Then you have your skills competition with, for example, like you mentioned, the horse. You mentioned off the air the horse. That would be cool. Or I was watching a video of Lionel Messi that he did for a Japanese television where they put panels in front of a goal with numbers, and he had to pick the numbers to hit the targets to show how, you know, his skill with penalty kicks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So you could do it where you have targets on the upper 90, you know, the post, lower 90, stuff like that. And then you have five of the best free kick specialists take the targets and knock them out or something like that. I mean, something to make it more of an event. And then the All-Star Game, you have it as the centerpiece. And then the All-Star game, you relax the rules. For example, you only call offsides if the player is entirely past the last defender.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. You know, you relax the rules a little bit so that you can get 5-4. You know what I'm saying? And things like that. Because, you know, NBA All-Star game, it's like 150 to 139, and it's fun. So they need to make it, I would like to see a more of a weekend like that.
And it needs to be more fun as well. Not just for the people watching, but I think the players as well. You know, a chance to really show off. Because that's what everybody else gets to do at these All-Star weekends, in ice hockey, in basketball, and baseball. There's an element of just showing off and showing why you are in that level of sport, you know, why you are that good, what you've got to get to that level. I think it'd be really fun for the guys as well. George, before we let you go, I'm going to have to remind you that I look very much forward to catching up with you throughout the season, especially on the 22nd of December, when the first Milan derby takes place in Serie A. And in week 36 of the Italian football season as well, when the return game for Milan and Milan come home against Inter. I look forward to chatting with you then, George. I really do, because I don't see Inter having a very promising season this year, even though Walter Mazzarri is a fantastic coach.
The moves that they've made, I know they lost that young kid, the young defender. I can't remember his name, that a lot of people were highly touting. He went to the Premiership. I can't remember the name off the top of my head. I want to say Donati, but I'm not 100% sure. The best move they made was getting Mazzarri, but Inter finished mid-table last season, and they haven't really made any big-name signings to look like they're going to improve. Maybe they got some youngsters in the Primavera that'll come up. Who knows? But, yeah, those Milan derbies are going to be fun, man. I'm going to look forward to that. Yeah.
we'll definitely get you back in time for them. And we will get you back, I hope, before the start of the season here in Europe as well. But for now, George, quickly before we let you go as well, tell us what's coming up on Mad About Football. Haven't done that yet. What's coming up on the show today, mate?
Well, Mad About Football, we're lining up. Juan is lining up some great interviews, so we're looking forward to that. You know, we'll follow us on Twitter, Mad About Football, and we'll give you all the updates on what interviews we have. We're looking at doing a couple of previews with the Dutch league on Gold TV. Now we have the Eredivisie, also Bundesliga preview as well. And with the Argentine season starting soon, we might do something with that. So we'll keep you guys updated on our Twitter handle, which is Mad About Football, and also on our Facebook page as well, the Mad About Football Show. So we got some good stuff lining up. We're still kind of trying to put it together in the meeting of the minds to make it happen, but it's going to be fun.
It's always fun on Mad About Football, man. I love listening to you guys crack the show out every week. And George, we love having you on our show here as well at World Football Daily, mate. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate we've taken up a fair amount of your time, but we look forward to getting you back on as soon as possible, my man.
Thanks a lot, Oliver. Appreciate it, man. And we'll talk soon about the Inter Milan and whatever craziness that goes on in Rio next.
Hey, there's no need to talk about Inter Milan, mate, because it's not even worth talking about, I'm sure.
Ooh. Ooh. Okay,
I'm getting arrogantly confident this season about the Milan-Inter rivalry, my man. Arrogantly confident. George, man, take care. Have a cracking day, and we will catch up with you very soon, mate.
All right, you too. You have a great one.
Cheers, man. George Metellus there joining us here on World Football Daily to talk all things Brazilian football and, of course, the All-Star game as well, coming up the Major League Soccer All-Star weekend.